Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
My oldest son's mom came to me and told me she was pregnant. Now, this time I'm living in the house with my mama. I don't really have a car. I'm stacking paper trying to fix up on my Impala in the back. I got 7 years of probation for a dope charge I had caught about a year and a half prior. And you know, a switch hit in my head. Like, man, by the time my child is born, I can't be here living like this. I got to do something.
My name is Detavio Samuels, and welcome to The Black Print, where I sit with the innovators, disruptors, and change makers. My guests open up about every step of their journey and share lessons learned along the way to provide creators, entrepreneurs, and executives with a tangible blueprint for navigating to the top of their industry. This is The Black Print. Welcome to The Black Print.
Here, I always like to start with my favorite quote. Everybody sees you on the mountaintop. Everybody don't see you on the climb. This is the show where we talk to the ceiling breakers, the disruptors, the innovators, the entrepreneurs about their climb to the top. And today, I'm so excited to be sitting here with my man, T.I. You know, as a young man growing up, college, early grad school, like this was the music you were making was the music that drove me, was a soundtrack to my life. And so grateful for you to be here and to have the honor of sitting with you, King. And the way we always kick it off so that I don't mess up the intro is I let kings and queens introduce themselves to the audience. So
okay.
If you can, tell the folks who you are, do it with your swag. We don't need to be humble in this moment.
I get, man, from my perspective, Tip Harris, Atlanta native, husband, father, creative visionary, artist, and entrepreneur.
Beautiful. All right, so that's the top of the mountain. We're going to go all the way back to the bottom.
Sure.
So let's go to young T.I. growing up. Tell me a little bit about your childhood. What was it like for T.I. growing up?
Man, I think that I had a fairly decent one, you know. I didn't spend much time, you know, doing a lot of constructive athletics or playing. I rode bikes and, you know, I was mischievous and, you know, just got into stuff. But I didn't, I ain't playing on no team sports or nothing like that. For a large portion of my childhood, it was spent, you know, figuring out how to put paper together. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my definite intention. My daddy, one of the first things that my daddy taught me was that a man was supposed to keep money in his pocket, take care of his mama and the women in his family. That was, like, one of the first lessons that I got. I might have been about 3 years old. You know, my daddy used to always, like, give me $1 every day. And then, like, when he had seen me in a minute, he'd say, man, you got some money in your pocket? And I'd be like, nah, then they give me $1. You know what I'm saying? Which kind of trained me or put me in the mindset, keeping some paper on me. And my pops, he was from New York. You know, he had moved. He was a mover and shaker from New York. He did his thing in Harlem back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever. And I spent my summers with him. At this time, he was an old man, you know what I'm saying? He was 55, 54, 55, 56 years old. When we spent our summers together, When it's time for me to go home, he'd give me some money. You know what I'm saying? He'd probably give me $150, $250 or something. And the first time I got home, got to my mama, my mama found it in my pant pocket. And she said, okay, I'm going to hold this for you so you don't lose it. And you know what I'm saying? Of course, we all know anybody grew up in a black family. I ain't see that money no more. So I learned then, you know, the next year when I got that paper, I was thinking, okay, so I'm going to have to figure out how to stretch this money until I see him again, which was Christmas. He'd come down to Atlanta for Christmas. So I lived in a middle-class community. Off Bankhead. At the time, it was a middle-class community. Off of Bankhead, working-class community. Off of Bankhead, Atlanta's west side. And I lived with my grandparents, my grandmama, my grandfather. Both were working, you know, multiple jobs, you know what I'm saying, just to get it, you know, make ends meet. And I had experience with the candy lady mm-hmm. in my neighborhood.
Love a candy lady.
Yeah. Mandatory. You dig what I'm saying? But I noticed it on my way to school, you know what I'm saying? Some people didn't get to the candy lady. They didn't make it at the house in time to stop at the candy lady. They didn't bring nothing with them. So there was no candy lady in school. So I said, you know what, man? I could take this little paper, man. I could stretch this money out. Selling candy in school. So I went to Sam's Warehouse. My grandmama had a membership at Sam's Warehouse, which is like Costco. And I took, I think it was 50, maybe $30, and grabbed like a lot of like big tubs of candy. And I think that $50 might have, you know, worked me up to $120 or something. And my goal was to make $20 a day. Mm. Which would translate to $100 a week, $400 a month. And I only needed 3 months until December came, till I seen my pops again. I can get some more money. And then, you know, I could replenish my budget again. Mm-hmm. And so I did this, and it started at $20 a day. Then it just grew, you know what I mean?
What age are you? Like,
this is fourth grade. Okay, this is fourth grade. I don't remember how old I was. I just know it was fourth grade. By the time I was in fifth grade, though, it was known. People would come to me every day. And my fifth grade teacher, most teachers just turn a blind eye to it, you know. But my fifth grade teacher, I was, you know, conducting some business in the boy bathroom. And this teacher was a man. So my previous teacher was a woman. So when I go to the bathroom, I was safe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? This teacher was a man. His name was Mr. Flynn at Grove Park Elementary. So I go in there, I'm handling my business, you know, for the day and whatnot, starting my day out. And Mr. Flynn walk in there, he walk in there fat, boom. Mm. And I ain't have a time to get myself together. So I'm like, and he say, yeah, I know what you're doing. You're not supposed to be doing that, is you? I say, I don't know. And then he say, well, you know you ain't supposed to be doing it. Now, I'll tell you what, I could call your mama, turn you in, or you could just make sure I get me a Snicker every day. And you can do what you need to do. I say, cool. So that taught me a lot, you know what I'm saying?
First lesson in extortion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I call it, you know, added expenses, you know. That's the cost of doing business, you dig? And, you know, so I think that was kind of my first. And then my entrepreneurial endeavors, it just expanded. Mm. I went from that to starting, you know, selling used Nintendo cartridges to starter coats and, you know, just all kinds of, you know what I'm saying, odds and ends. I was just a consultant of goods and services. Mm-hmm. And so that started my entrepreneurial efforts.
Yeah, love that. So you are, Pops teaches you the importance of having a dollar in your pocket at age 3. Mm. You are a full-fledged entrepreneur, fourth grade, fifth grade on. When do you start rapping? Because that happens at a young age as well, right?
Yeah, I think second grade.
Okay, so early.
Yeah, I believe second grade. So I used to always get in trouble in school, man, because, you know, I finished my work early, disrupt the class. And it was this one week, and this was like a testing week, you know, like when the school is kind of preparing all the kids for this test, which I later learned was a standardized test that they'd use to determine how many prisons to build in the future based off of the percentage of children that failed this test. That's how they determine how many prisons to build in the future off the standardized test. But anyway, so it was this test, right? And as usual, I finished early, and my uncle told me, if I hear something else from you getting in trouble in school, I'm gonna get on your ass. Mm. And I remember that. And so, you know, I'm trying to find a way to occupy my time. I'm working real hard not to be disruptive, you know. But everybody else quiet, head down. I'm like, man, what? You know what I mean? And so I just pulled out a pen and paper and, you know, I just challenged myself to see if I could write my own rap. Because I was known for kind of like just doing, I did my rendition of LL Cool J, I'm Bad, for like my older cousins and my uncles and stuff. So I challenged myself to see if I could write my own rap. So by the time everybody else was finished, I had a rap. And I did it at the cafeteria table.
You performed, okay.
Yeah, for the kids, yeah. You know what I'm saying? I did it, and they was like, ooh, you didn't do that? I'm like, yeah, I did. I said, well, do another one. So overnight, I wrote another one. So at the cafeteria table, the next day, I did it again. So that became my thing, you know what I mean? But I did not know that it was something that a kid could do, you know what I mean? I thought I had to wait till I got older, but it was my thing. And so my Uncle Quint, he'll ride me around. We'll go to the arcade, you know what I mean? Go buy some tennis shoes and stuff on the weekend. And subsequently, he was handling his business, going in and out of different places, coming out with bags of money and putting them in the back seat. You know, I later became aware of what was going on, but at the time, I ain't know, you know. And he asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I told him, I want to do what you do. He said, well, what do I do?
Right.
I said, you ride around and pick up money all day. And he said, if anybody asks you, that's all you tell them. And then he said, but what do you want to do? You know, like, what do you like for yourself? And I said, I want to rap. So he said, okay, well, I'll tell you what. You learn everything it is to know about, you know, what it take to be in the music business. And I make sure you have the money behind you to get there. Mm. Bet. So I went and got books. You know what I mean? Everything you need to know about the music business. Hit me and just all kinds of just music books. And I started learning, researching. And by the time I had read the books, he got locked up. And so he went away on a 10-year bid. But I still had this knowledge and I still had this passion. I still had this talent. And you know, that those things coupled together with my entrepreneurial efforts kind of led me, you know, to where I am today.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Yeah, so how do you cross that chasm from wanting to rap to becoming a rapper when the person who is going to be your catalyst, right? The person who is going to help you get there disappears and is not able to help you cross over. How do you end up figuring out how to get there?
Well, see, yeah, that's what I meant by I ain't spend much time in my childhood, like really focusing on my childhood. Most of the time in my childhood, I was focusing on how to get my mom out of the ghetto. That was my first priority. You know what I'm saying? And that started you know, very, very like grassroots base level, helping with bills around the house, making sure the light bill didn't get cut off, making sure the gas bill were paid. You know what I mean? It started real like necessity driven. And then, you know, as I got older and I kind of like, you know, I would introduce to, you know, the neighborhood pharmaceutical network, I set my sights on a larger thing like buying her a car, you know. And in the meanwhile, I was still like going to win talent shows and doing little stuff that I knew I could do. But I had no idea what no studio was. I didn't know where no offices, did no record label were. I had zero clue of how, you know, to connect these dots. I saw what let me know that I could do it as a kid. Then when I really, really, really got serious about the music.
Which is like what age? Like where are we?
They call it 12, 13. I saw Criss Cross.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I saw him like be interviewed and stuff. And in the interview, I saw him say that JD discovered them at the mall. Like, man, I'm in the mall every week, man. I know
JD, where you at?
Where my shot, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But that let me know, you know what I'm saying? Watching them do it, seeing how they rep for the city, man, you know what I mean? And then I knew people who knew them. I didn't know them personally, but I knew people. We kind of from the same community. Mm-hmm. I'm from, like, west side. They from the southwest side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go to the same malls and kind of talk to the same girls, you know what I mean? So I knew them, and I knew, okay, if it can happen for them, it can happen for me.
Yeah.
I just got to keep pushing. That's when I knew, like, okay, I could get started on this now. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what I'm saying, like Illegal, you know what I mean? Malik and Jamal, you know, ABC, Another Bad Creation.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's just Shaheem or Shaq.
From New York.
Yeah. So it was just different little examples that I just kept seeing, like, man.
Young kids popping.
It's something here for me. Mm-hmm. And then when I made my way, my sister, actually, my father's oldest daughter, she caught wind of what I was doing, and I believe her husband at the time was, I guess, friends with a manager, someone who used to manage Otis Redden, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And they kind of took me in under their wing and put me through artist development. That when I, you know, got my first little artist picture. And started moving around in the little underground, unsigned artist circuit about 13, 14, going to the studio, meeting producers, creating a demo. Took that demo, sent that demo to different record companies. Mm-hmm. Was unanimously rejected. I mean,
and why do you think that was? Like, look, the South was different back then. You know what I mean? Like, so much of hip hop comes out of the South now.
Yes,
but back then that wasn't necessarily the case. Was it people weren't used to the sound? People didn't like the sound? Like,
I don't know. That may have had, you know, something to do with it, but more so, I was a kid talking about real kind of adult stuff, but I didn't ascertain at the time Criss Cross became Criss Cross because they were talking about missing the bus.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they had a very parent-friendly...
Sure, ABC 2.
You know, yeah, ABC 2 at the playground. You know what I mean? I wasn't talking about stuff like that. You know? And I think that is a big part of what... But I couldn't see that. It was really like my therapy. I just needed to get my truth out for real. And, you know, it just always has bled out into my artistry. So that didn't work. And, you know, after a few years of rejection, I just dove head first into the streets. Mm-hmm. When I saw Master P, like, I think that was like Ice Cream Man. Like, when I saw the success of Master P taking proceeds from one area of entrepreneurship, investing it in the music, and not waiting on a label to validate or accept you, I think that's when I kind of like went real heavy in the other direction. Mm-hmm.
How did it feel? So you've been writing since you were in second grade, third grade. How did it feel? Do you remember how it felt to get to the place where you were making music, you were putting your heart into the sound and the music, and it is getting rejected over and over and over again? Do you remember what that felt like?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, it was it was deflating, mm-hmm. you know. As a kid, it didn't feel good, but I knew I was raw. I just did. I just knew I was raw. I went to several schools around the city. Every school I went to, I was the one that rapped. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody had that kid in school. Everybody knew had certain talents. There's a dude that could draw real good. You know what I'm saying? There's a dude real good at basketball, football, so on. Dude that hit flips, you know, and I was the guy that rapped. You know what I'm saying? And that was everywhere I went. So I began, like, to just earn this reputation for myself as a phenomenal talent in that particular area. So I knew I was raw. You know what I mean? I was already being, I guess, praised or receiving accolades from my peers for it. I just had to get a shot, be introduced to someone who could offer me the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally enough, the first opportunity I was placed in front of, that was the one that did it.
So let's talk about that. Who was it and how did you get there?
KP, Kawan Prather, worked at LaFace Records, but also was a member of a group called PA. PA, Parental Advisory, member of Dungeon Family, Organized Noise. And he was the third member of the group, like the producer, the DJ, you know. So all three of them were producers. He was a DJ, so it was a DJ and two rappers. Sort of Run DMC-ish, you know what I'm saying? So he was the DJ, they were two rappers and producers. And also, he had this A&R gig at LaFace. And I believe, you know, his launch pad to success at LaFace was, I believe he was the guy that took Usher to Jermaine Dupri. For the My Way project. And the success of that garnered him his own imprint, mm-hmm. which was Ghetto Vision. Ghetto Vision had, at the time, signed Young Bloods. That was, you know, taking off, doing well, having an incredible success. I had been introduced to DJ Toomp by my cousin, Toot. Not the same person. Toot, no longer with us, God rest him, introduced me to DJ Toomp. And DJ Toomp introduced me to Jason Jeter. So I was still, you know, doing my thing. And we'd agreed that we were going to, you know, put our efforts and resources and energies together so we could do this demo. And so we did that. But what happened was my oldest son's mom came to me and told me she was pregnant. Now, this time I'm living in the house with my mama. I don't really have a car. I'm stacking paper, trying to fix up on my Impala in the back. I got 7 years of probation for a dope charge I had caught about a year and a half prior. And you know, a switch hit in my head. Like, man, by the time my child is born, I can't be here living like this. I got to do something. So Jason, Toomp, and Toot had an intervention. They called me, sat me down, and they said, hey, man, you jeopardizing all of our investment by your decisions and what you're doing. And they's like, yo, we put money in it. We put time in it. And all of it could be out the window. You know, you already on probation. You catch another case, you done. And I was like, man, well, I got a baby on the way, so, you know, the rap shit don't really pay. Ain't nothing going, ain't no motion. So if y'all could take me somewhere and show me an opportunity, I'll stop. But if not, and of course the whole, you know, everybody was like, yo, man, that's ridiculous, man. That's not even reasonable. How can we just take you somewhere? And Jason raised their hand and said, I got a place. He was also the intern at Patchwork Studio. And that was the studio where PA were working on their project. PA project, you know, they wanted to be on some chronic Dr. Dre type vibe. So they wanted new artists to be, you know, introduced on their project. And so they were like combing, you know, through the city for undiscovered talent. So Jason called him, was like, yo, I got somebody you ain't heard. They're going to be raw. And anybody that you've been listening to. And they was like, bring them through. So that same night, we went in the Patchwork, walked in the room. Jason introduced me to Reese and Mello, I believe. I don't think KP was there. Or maybe he was. Don't remember. So anyway, they introduced me. And, you know, the little arrogant little cat I was at the time. They say, can you rap on this? Hit a beat. I was like, what a boof at. And so I go in there. One take it. Boom. And I walk out. They like, damn, where you been? I'm like, shit, riding my bike up and down Bankhead every night. And so, you know, they introduced me to KP from there, or KP at that time got our number, we changed numbers. Then we played our demo for him, you know, and then nothing. So I'm back on the bike, you know, pedaling, doing my thing. And maybe about a week or two later, sometime later, I got a page. On a pager, and it didn't have no code. It was just a phone number. That was all right, 'cause my pages usually come with code, so I know what to do when I get where I'm going. But this one didn't have, it's just a phone number. So I went and called on the payphone, and it says, LaFace Records, may I help you? First thing I'm thinking, who in the hell smoking dope at LaFace? Well, I'm like, man, who? Now, did anybody page tip from there? And he was like, yeah, it must have been KP. Hold on, let me put you through.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify has made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of. Primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify.
Bring your business to Shopify at shopify.com/blackprint, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/blackprint. Shopify.com/blackprint.
And now it's starting, I'm like, oh, okay. Because I forgot all about it. I thought it was just another wasted, you know. And he say, hey, man, yeah, so, yeah, we met. You know, you did the verse on PA, and we met, da-da-da-da. I'm like, okay, yeah, what's going on? He's like, man, I was just wondering, man, if you were free to go to L.A. with us to the Source Award. I say, well, us who? He was like, well, you know, me, the Youngblood, Outkast, Goody Mob, Cool Breeze.
Wow.
Bad Bunny. I was like, shh. I was like, hold on, man. Let me check my schedule. Yeah, I think I'm free, man. Yeah. I think I might be able to make it. And, you know, okay, so from that point, I knew I had to get myself together, man. I wasn't going out there like no slouch. So, you know, whatever I had, I took my re-up to my plug. I said, hey, man, I'm give me what I always get, then double down on it, and I'll pay you back. You know what I mean? And he was like, all right, cool, no problem. So I did that. So everything except for what I needed to re-up, to pay him back and re-up, took my proceeds out to Cali. Now, it's my first trip to California, my first trip, like, as an artist being, I guess, courted, you know what I mean, as an artist. And it put me in the room with Goody Mob. I mean, I remember meeting Cujo, T-Mo. I don't know if CeeLo would get with that. I remember meeting Cujo, T-Mo, of course, the Youngbloods, C-Bone. Mm. And I remember meeting them like in the hotel lobby when we first got there. They like, yeah, what's up, man? KP introduced me. They were like, yeah, what's happening, man? Where you from? Like, man, I'm from Atlanta. Like, nah, where you from? Like, right. For real. I'm like, shit, from Bankhead, Center Hill, Baker Road. And then like T-Mo, like, boy, I'm from Church Street, but you're two streets up. I'm like, oh, okay, what's happening? And you know what I'm saying? Cujo was like, yeah, man, I'm from Gun Club, which is Hollywood Road, not far down. And so he's like, man, you from the city. I'm like, yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? You know, we had that bond and connection. And throughout the day, I met Big Boy, CeeLo, I met Andre, I met, you know what I mean, Backbone. I just started meeting these people that I just grew up, I was listening to, these people that I was like, damn, I stood in line to get these CDs, absolutely, man. And now I'm right here with these cats. Two things happened that really, really like shifted my attention. A few things happened. I'm gonna just run them down to you. Mm-hmm. One, they were there to perform at the Source Award. They were there to perform Watch for the Hook, which is Cool Breeze's song, but it's a song that has the entire Dungeon Family on it, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so you know, they were there to perform that song at the Source Awards. All right, but as you know, for tape performances, they usually do a camera blocking the day before. Cool Breeze didn't fly. So he was driving from Atlanta to LA. He had timed himself to get there for the filming, not the camera blocking. Mm. So they like, man, we need somebody to do Cool Breeze part. I said, man, I know it. So for the camera blocking, I was actually able to be on stage with Outkast, Goody Mob, Backbone, with all of the Witch Doctor, all of the people that I paid money for their CD. These are cats that I like idolize in a sense. And after that, you know what I'm saying? I was knighted or accepted. I was like, really, like, okay, you one of us now. And then I believe right after that, we went on, I believe, Goody Mob tour bus, right? And was on Goody Mob tour bus, just chilling and smoking and vibing. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Big Les and Joe Clell came in to do an interview, right? So they come in, do this interview, and they ask everybody to freestyle. Mm. So, of course, some cats were ready to go and some weren't. And I hopped in there and got on. Bow! You know what I mean? Everybody like, oh, he for real, for real. And so from then, like, Cat was like, okay, I see why he here now. You see what I'm saying? And then on top of that, another thing, I believe they were after the tour bus. Then we go back in the hotel, and Big Boy turned to me and say, hey, man, you know what I mean? Finna go up to the room, man, go smoke. You know what I mean? Man, just come to the room. Gave me a room number. Like, man, shh. Nigga, Big Boy, just.
Yeah.
Man, so, okay. After that trip, now I'm supposed to go back home. I was supposed to take the inventory that I had, I was supposed to, you know, make sure that it got taken care of, take the liquidity, pay off my debt, continue my business. I gave that shit away. I didn't want to sell no more dope. I didn't want to touch it. I gave it to my partner. I said, man, if you want it, you can have it. Told my plug, I say, look, bro, I'm going to pay you. I just ain't going to pay you right now. I'm doing the rap thing, man. I ain't trying to mess it up. Mm. He looked at me and said, all right, I tell you what. You don't owe me nothing. If you're chasing, if you doing that, you don't owe me nothing. If you get back in the game, I want my money. But as long as you're doing that, you don't owe me anything. Right. You know what I mean?
So at this point in time, are you feeling like you've made it? So you have rapped on stage at the Source Awards, Rap City, right?
I didn't rap on stage at the Source Awards.
At the rehearsal.
At the rehearsal. I made it to the rehearsal.
You made it to the rehearsal. You're riding around with Atlanta greats. You rapping on Rap City, Joe Clair, et cetera.
Yeah.
And getting respect from the Atlanta greats. At this point in time, do you feel like you've made it?
Shit, I had made it somewhere. You know what I mean? I could see motion. You know what I mean? I saw progress. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And that's all you needed to say. Let me put this
in. Yeah, I was too close. Mm-hmm. I was too close. Mm-hmm. I was too close. I felt like I had kicked myself in the ass a whole lot of times I was just too close at that time. Something in me said, Let's stick with this. We got something. Yeah. We got something right here. This shit working. This shit finally working. Yeah. Let's stick with it. So
how do you end up getting your first real deal?
Oh, after that, I mean, you know, while we was in LA, KP was like, man, I want to sign you. You know what I mean? What we want to do. So when we got back, you know, it was passing paperwork back and forth from my attorney to business affairs at LaFay. And so, you know, the deal got done in a matter of weeks. And we started working on my album in a matter of months. And, you know, we just took off.
Yeah.
And
so you do that album and you do it with another label. But then you go, your entrepreneurial, like, skin must have been popping again. So don't you go off to create your own label?
Well, now, yes, I do. But don't get me wrong. I would have loved to just been, you know, a pampered artist.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I would have stayed a LaFay man and just, you know, lived in the lap of luxury. And, you know, I would have done that had I been afforded the opportunity to do so. But as legend would have it, you know, my first album, you know, when it first dropped, it didn't really receive the attention or the support from the label that, you know, I feel like it had an opportunity to. Largely because L.A. at the time, he had sold LaFace, and he'd taken the position as the president of Arista, which turns him from a boutique label to now you are CEO of this, you know, this monstrosity of a company. And he got people to answer to now. And so he's working on getting the next 5 million double platinum. He's working on Tony Braxton, Usher. He's working on, you know what I mean, like OutKast. He's working on his guaranteed, you know, the people he know going to hit home run. He ain't got time to really slow down for me. Yeah, it's understandable. But I had to take matters into my own hand. I just took the stuff that we had, all them promotional CDs, all that stuff that was just sitting in a warehouse after they had moved to New York. We went and got it. And I'd go to projects and malls or anywhere in the South, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, South Carolina, you know what I mean? And I'd just pass them out. And I would even go, I go to the project, find the weed man, get some gas from him. And while we rolling up and smoking, I'm like, shit, man, check me out. Mm. While we smoking, by the time we get through smoking, they like, they fans. They're like, man, hell yeah, boy, you hard. You know what I mean? And that made his way to the club DJ. We made his way to the radio stations. And it went from moving around on our own dime to being called to perform for 1,500, 2,500, 5,000, 10,000, 15,000. We had then grown to about getting about 25,000-30,000 a show. After we were doing mixtapes, met DJ Drummer, you know what I'm saying? Nurtured that relationship, started doing Gangsta Grills with him in the streets with me and the PSC, and even paid for my own radio budget for my first single for the next album. Got a call from LA. LA say, man, let's start working on the second album. Like, man, where you been, bro? You know, we've been operating as an independent. We've been spending our own money, investing in ourselves. If we gonna do anything by the second album, I really was trying to do another single off the first album. Mm. If we gonna do a second album, I'm gonna need $2 million from you to make sure I don't go through the same thing again. So we'll replenish what we spent and have enough to handle our own business. And if you don't, and we need our own joint venture, 50-50, or else you could just drop her, let her go. He was like, man, all right, cool, man. You know what I mean? Let me think about it. Y'all, you know, we'll have lunch. Y'all, you know, and come back. I think about it. So we go to lunch, come back. He said, well, I'm going to give you what you want. I'm letting you go.
Yeah.
And so that is really what started the entrepreneurial efforts again. But he did me, you know, probably one of the greatest favors. That was one of the most noble gestures in business that I could think of. He's still my OG, man, still a mentor to this day. Mm-hmm. I still consider myself of the LaFace alumni. But letting me go, man, that allowed me to take my talent to the fair market, mm-hmm. and get, you know, a more than fair deal, mm-hmm. from Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. I want to get into the entrepreneurship stuff, but last thing on the music piece. It's been a long walk from second grade to rehearsals at the Source Awards to being signed with LaFace to then being, you know, separating partnership from like, when do you finally feel like you made it as an artist? Like, do you remember, I don't know if it was an album, was it a moment on stage, but when are you like, my God, I am finally here?
I had a lot of almost. You know what I mean? I had a lot of almost. I feel like I almost made it a lot of times. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, my second album, Trap Music, of course, it went gold at the time, but it was right there at platinum. So I was almost, you know what I mean? It later became platinum. And this is the 20th anniversary of Trap Music, by the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I think at the time, Trap Music had sold like 775, something like that. Like, bam,
yeah, right,
almost.
Yeah.
You feel me? But we had hits, you know what I mean? 24 was a big record. Be Easy was a big record. Rubber Band Man was a big record. Uh-huh. Let's Get Away was a big record. Started getting recognition, you know, nationally from people like Puff. Pharrell had always supported me for my first album. But people starting to catch on, you know what I mean? My record's starting to play on New York radio now. So it's becoming more than just a regional thing. And I mean, it took off, but it didn't really take off. You know, I'm looking at 50 Cent. I'm like, man, anything else? Looking at Nelly. I'm like, man, shit, man. So I felt like I almost made it. You know what I mean? So the next album, which was Urban Legend. Oh, and right at the video shoot for Rubber Band Man, I got in some trouble. And I was still on the same probation, but I got in some trouble. And that took me back. It took me back, you know, to serve a probation violation. And so I couldn't even really push it from 775 to over the million mark. But I wrote most of Urban Legend while I was away. So I came back, started working on Urban Legend immediately. And while I was away, I believe that's when Leo Cohen and Edgar Broffman had acquired Warner Music. So Leo Cohen went from Def Jam, came over to Warner, and he was like, you know, he told me, you the one. He came to see me in jail and said, man, you the one. When you get out of here, we going. And after Leo, then Kevin Lyles came, Julie Greenwald came, and you know what I'm saying? So now it's the Def Jam team. You know what I mean? And I knew what that meant. And we just started pushing.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It's Devin here from Money Honeys. If you're a fan of learning about your business and finances through storytelling and pop culture, then you got to be sure to check out and subscribe to Money Honeys, a show that covers the nitty-gritty of maintaining your personal wealth through fun conversation. And you know what? It's brought to you exclusively by the Revolt Podcast Network. Anchored in hip hop, powered by creators.
Got at did You Don't Know Me, mm-hmm. from Urban Legend. Mm-hmm. Bring Him Out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just start Get Loose. Just start pushing, and that was a platinum record. But it was like it went like 1.3, 1.5. I was trying to get the double. You know what I'm saying? So I'm almost there again. and then So, but something special happened during that album process. I got offered the opportunity to be in a movie. You know what I mean? Mm. Talking to Dallas Austin. Back in my first album, he asked me to read for one of his movies that he was doing. And I went and read for it. I didn't get it. When I went, they were like, yeah, man, you know what I'm saying? We like you, but can you play the drums? I'm like, I could play like I'm playing the drums. You know what I mean? Like, nah, we got a guy that says he's willing to learn how to play the drums. So I didn't get the role, you know what I mean? Some no-name guy named Nick Cannon took that role for me. But some weirdo, you know what I mean? But you know, I developed a relationship with Dallas, and he just kept his eyes on me. So by the time I was working on Urban Legend, or I was releasing Urban Legend, he approached me. And I was like, hey, man, this time, just give me the role, man. Don't make me go through that. He was like, all right, bet, you got it. So he was working on a project. At the time, it was called Jelly Beans. It was about a skating rink, a very famous skating rink in Atlanta. And, you know, he wanted me to star in it. And I was like, bet. Then Will Smith came on with Overbrook Entertainment. And it was a huge, huge amount of responsibility to entrust a first-time actor with the starring role of a major motion picture, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a first-time director in Chris Robinson. Mm. And so, you know, the studio was like, nah, we ain't... Mm-mm.
Too much risk.
We ain't going. And Dallas and Will Smith said, well, if he don't do it, we ain't doing the movie. And so, you know, they let me, you know what I mean? They gave me the shot. And so that's how I got the role of Rashad in ATL.
Yeah.
Which I almost got fired from. Okay. first few days, man, I come late, man. But this was the first time, like, okay, I had just got like a $7 million check and a $5 million check. So I'm coming to set, smoke blowing out the new Phantom, and I'm not really, you know, I'm like, man, I get there 40 minutes late. I'm like, 40 minutes later, the studio is early. And, you know, they sat me down. They were like, man, they gonna fire you. In the back of my mind, I'm like, man, so? I get to go spend this money now. And Chris Robinson told me, no, bro, look, man, this is not just an opportunity for you. You know, you're a first-time actor. I'm a first-time director. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of first-time actors in the cast. Bro, we looking to you to lead the team. We need you to, we can't, it ain't just like you go away and they get somebody else. Mm-hmm. You go away, the whole opportunity to go away. Man, we need, I was like, but damn, man, just put it like that. Mm-hmm. So that's when it became more of a responsibility. It became more, I felt, I don't know, I guess, I felt like connected. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
It's bigger than you.
Yeah. I felt a fellowship of sorts. And that when I started taking the shit seriously.
Mm-hmm. And that you have a lot of like, so you're getting new money. You have any advice or thoughts for people when they get that first check, right? You're talking about I got $5 million here, $7 million here. They may not be getting the same size checks, right? But any lessons for people like when you get that first check, what you like, go splurge, go spend it all, put mm-hmm. some in like any advice or thoughts?
Invest first. You know what I mean? Invest first. You going, you know, now telling them the exact right thing to do ain't going to work because that's going to seem so overwhelming. They're going to be like, I never reached that. So they're going to do nothing. So invest first. And what's left, do what you want. But make sure you acquire assets, you know, some form of property, whether it's a condo, townhouse, a home, or just a patch of grass. Mm. Invest in something. And do that before you spend money on any depreciating liability. Mm-hmm. Invest first. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that would save me. When I got my first check, my uncle was just getting out of prison. The one who, you know, mm-hmm. who told me he was going to put me on. he was just getting out of prison, and he heard, you know what I mean? Of course, the whole family was talking about it. I had my shot. He was like, man, you know what, man? You just got your check, right? I said, yeah. He said, man, give me $40,000. I said, man, I ain't seen you in 10 years. Bro. You supposed to be giving me. He said, man, I'd do it for you. Just give me $40,000. I said, all right, bro. I gave it to him. I gave him the money, you know what I mean? Went and blew the rest, like I said. I didn't really blow it. I kind of bought the stuff I needed. Like I said, I bought, you know, a truck, apartment for myself, a little furniture, you know what I'm saying? A little get fresh kits and shit. Oh, by the time my son was born, I told you what hit the switch in my mind when his mom said she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. By the time he was born, I had a record deal. I had my own truck. I had my own apartment. I completely, you know, manifested myself into a better situation. Oh, you dig?
Yeah.
But after you gave him the 40, I kind of went on and forgot about it.
All right, so you are music career popping, acting career popping. Now you're starting to build assets. Let's talk about the empire you have now and some of the assets that you're sitting on top of.
So I feel like, okay, when most people look at me or introduce me, they say, okay, T.I., rapper. Mm. And true enough, rapping is something that I do well. So I don't mind it as much, but I feel like it don't necessarily speak to all my gifts. Mm-hmm. I think what I have really found a knack for doing over the years is building brands. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm a brand builder in many different areas, whether that's a coup, and Hustle Gang, which are the two clothing lines that that we own, whether that's Grand Hustle, the label, Grand Hustle Films, whether that's the Trap Music Museum, which is on year 4 of operation, and the top 5 museums in the South, top 6 tourist attractions in Atlanta.
What made you open up a museum?
Well, it was ironically to celebrate the 15th anniversary of the album Trap Music. Yeah, I mean,
it just never went away.
I would look. Yeah, man, it was only supposed to be a 3-month installation.
Pop up.
I was actually looking for a unique way outside of just showing up and doing the show, performing all the song, and I also wanted to celebrate the genre, not just the album. You feel me? I felt like, and it was so much question, concern, and just mystery around who really did what with trap music. Mm-hmm. So I felt like there was an opportunity. It was a teachable moment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I felt, you know, nothing like facts, you know, to dispute fiction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I felt like it was an opportunity to celebrate the genre, celebrate the most significant contributors to the genre, to inspire, to educate, and inform people of what trap music is, why it's important, who were the key players, who introduced it, you know what I mean? Who are taking it to the next level, who are making sure it makes its way into the future, and a safe space to create our own narrative. You know what I mean? To tell our story before someone that don't look like us can
tell it
on our behalf. And you know what I'm saying? And also with me acquiring commercial properties, I just had a building. And after the suggestion came to do a museum, I just started walking around the building like, yeah, okay, I see how we could do this. And, you know, again, the vision just manifested itself. With the team, the team and the support system that I had around me that could execute the vision properly. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Also, that led to the Trap City Cafe, which is a neighboring building that basically offers food, drinks, hookah, vibes, and also celebrates the most significant contributors to the culture of trap music. This time by way of photography, mostly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We got Cam Kirk.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah, he basically, all the photographs in there It's all his work.
Help.
You know what I mean? He embraced us, wrapped his arms around us. We definitely appreciate that. Let's see. We also have Bankhead Seafood. Mm. Bankhead Seafood is a restaurant, a flagship restaurant of the community that Killer Mike and I partnered to acquire. The building and the business from its matriarch. And we are now, you know, in the process of reconstructing the entire building and reimagining and reintroducing the brand to the community.
So you're a rapper, actor, real estate mogul, entrepreneur, restaurateur, but I know that you also do a lot for your community.
Yeah.
Right. Like you got into this level. And
I also forgot about Grand Hustle Film. So I'm working currently editing my first film as a director.
Congratulations. What's it called?
Thank you. It's called Departments.
Okay. What's
it's like saying The Apartments if you're from Atlanta.
Departments. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it basically like imagine like Clerks. You know, Clerks. Yeah. Mixed with Friday.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So like Clerks, it wasn't really about nothing. It was just, you know, the series of events that happened with these people that found themselves in and out of this particular convenience store. Mm. Okay, well, it's the same thing, but instead of a convenience store, we have a set of apartments here. And it's the, you know, just the daily, ordinary to extraordinary activities that, you know, happen to take place in this set of apartments. Somewhere on the west side of Atlanta.
When's that coming out?
I don't know. I'm currently in the midst of editing right now, and it's drop dead hilarious.
Okay.
I don't think, and it has like a roster of who's who. In comedy, DC Young Fly is producing it with me. So it's DC, Carlos Miller, Nav Green. K-Dub, Erica Duchess, Tyler Chronicles, Ronnie Jordan, Tokyo Jets, man.
Yeah, all the comedians.
It's a long laundry. Oh, King Harris, can't forget about him. It's a long laundry list of just up-and-coming, drop-dead, or up-and-coming and already established comedians, man, that came in and did their thing, and I'm excited about it. But go ahead,
I actually want to do the community piece, but before I do the community piece, what I want you to talk to me is about, like, what are tips, gifts, right? So, like, I'm really big on not defining yourself by a function, right? So it's not like I'm a marketer or I'm a finance person or I'm a restaurateur, right? Mm. But you have gifts that allow you to tap into all of those things. What are your gifts?
I think vision.
Definitely.
I believe, you know, like a true visionary. You see, a lot of times I can't see what's going on right now because I'm looking, I see
so far,
something in the future. You dig? And that kind of removes my ability to be able to focus on what's going on in the moment. And sometimes people may be like, yo, you need to do this. And they may be right, but I can't really see it because I already have a vision here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's something I already have in my head that is kind of blocking the vision of what you're trying to introduce me to. Not to say that you're wrong in what you're saying, but I'm so keyed in on this. And until I do this, I ain't gonna be able to see that. I think that's my gift. I also think that, surrounding myself with people who can take these visions and execute them.
That's a leadership's gift.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think
building and leading teams.
Seeing where there is nothing and envisioning something. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And also figuring out how to allow that something to service a purpose for a certain community or a certain, you know, I could go anywhere and say, okay, well, they need this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can provide this for this neighborhood or for this city or for this genre. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that might be like one of my most, I guess.
Yeah, powerful gifts. So to take that into the last question, which is about creating things that are helping communities. Mm. I know that you've been doing that not just yesterday, but for quite some time, right? Mm. I think it's so important that as we make our way up and climb up, that we find ways to pull back. Talk to me about some of the things you're doing for your community, for the people that you care about.
Man, well, one thing, man, I want to create like a self-sustaining ecosystem within the community. You know, all the things that I know we like to spend money on, I want to try and make sure that those things are very, very close to us.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Also providing employment to the community. Between the Trap City Cafe and the Trap Music Museum, it got to be like 60 jobs.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
67. And not to mention affordable housing. I learned that 90% of the people who work in Atlanta can't afford to live in the city of Atlanta. And that affects the culture and also affects the natives in many ways. So, you know, I had a vision to provide a space like a mixed use community in the city, in my area of Bankhead, and a piece of property that I acquired. Put a vision together for an affordable housing mixed use community, 143 units, and we've delivered that to the community.
Beautiful.
It is now available. There's 143 units of affordable housing units on Bankhead in the city right now.
Beautiful.
Based off that vision and the execution of that vision from the people around me that, you know, thought enough of me and thought enough of the vision to help me carry it out, or carry it out on my behalf, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, man. Also just diving in, like using my platform for a purpose whenever there are causes that I see that deserve to have a light shined on it or deserve, you know, a more visible presence.
Mm-hmm.
I try to make myself available for those type things with Us or Else. So there's a tablet called Moolah tablet. It's a company that, so I found this guy's named Vernell. He's a tech whiz out of Georgia Tech. And he developed this software, this technology. I guess it's an operating system that he put on a tablet. And this operating system allows the person to use it every time you engage with your tablet, you earn money based off ad revenue. So he basically worked a deal out with some ad revenue people. With some ad companies, ad agencies, and every time the ad pops up, you know what I mean, it generates paper. And so it's a tablet that you get paid to use.
Allows you to earn.
You know what I mean? And on top of that, he also went and got himself in a program with the government that gives away free tablets to people who are on government assistance or who live below the poverty line. So he got the government to pay for the tablets.
Yeah,
when he got the tablet,
solution.
He put his operating system on it.
Yeah.
That operating system allows people to earn money as they use it. So the tablet's free and you earn money for the tablet. So, you know what I'm saying? That's something that's called moolah. That's something that, you know, that I just assist his efforts in and, you know, try and make sure that there's free Wi-Fi, adequate technology in all the homes that, you know, that can't afford to have it. So that isn't the excuse or that isn't the reason why they aren't able to learn at the same rate or to, you know, be afforded the same opportunities as our Caucasian counterparts across town. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's an elegant solution. It's like three things. It's the digital divide, right? Putting a dent in the digital divide. It's putting a dent in the tech divide, right? Making sure we got the same and the right technology.
Right.
And then helping people build wealth and dollars. So you also just did this amazing thing. I know you've been doing it for over a decade. Harris Community Works. Tell us about that.
Harris Community Works, man. We just want to make sure that we offer our efforts and energy and attention to you know, people in the community during the holidays, mostly. We do like a turkey drive that we feed over 300 to 500 families.
Beautiful.
We part. Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's grown to over 1,000 families. we feed over 1,000 families in partnership with the city of Atlanta, the mayor, Humana, and other corporations, man. We come together and make sure that, you know, that the people in the community, you know what I'm saying, can afford to have a decent, healthy holiday, you know. And I think that's important, like quality of life-wise. That's something that, you know, if I could step up and do that, man, I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
We also partner with Next Level Boys Academy for Christmas. And we do things like a coup also. We do things like give shopping sprees to the kids that complete the program for the Next Level Boys Academy. Next Level Boys Academy is a diversion program. They take kids that were like, you know, at risk, in court, you know, catching cases. And when they sentence, instead of sending them to prison, the judge allows them to go through this program. If they complete this program, then they sentence will be commuted or diverted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you know, that's real important to me because I was one of them kids.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
And that kind of program didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the kids who kind of complete the program during Christmas time, man, we take them on a shopping spree with DTLR. And you know what I'm saying? Spend some hundreds of dollars on them for Christmas. And it'd be about, what'd it be like 150, 200 kids? How many kids it'd be? Yeah, 50 to 100 kids a year do that, and also Judge Asha Jackson. What's Judge Asha Jackson with Project Pinnacle? Judge Asha Jackson is a committed, phenomenal, brilliant judge in DeKalb County. A sister who has committed her efforts to a diversion program that also takes kids who are, you know, people, well, actually not even just kids, young adults as well, who have been sentenced to a prison sentence, and she let them go through her program in Project Pinnacle. And when they complete her program, then their sentences are commuted and diverted and give them another shot, you know what I mean, at a new life. So, you know, those are, you know what I'm saying, programs that are near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, no, I love it.
I was once in a similar position.
Yeah, no, I love it. Look, King, I appreciate you for being here. I think I want to say thank you on two different levels. The first level is thank you for being the soundtrack to my young adult life.
Hey,
I was in North Carolina.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, look.
You know what I'm saying? All them late nights in the studio, all that thinking of shit, man, it don't mean nothing if you don't listen. You get what I'm saying? So I appreciate you.
I can remember riding in my whip, listening to you like, yo, this man is bananas. So anyways, thank you for...
Man, appreciate you.
Yeah, man, the nights and everything that you got me through as a young man. And then today, just thank you for being the king and the man that you are, the visionary. Who is creating jobs, who is helping young people who fell into predicaments like yours, right? But then giving them a different way out, who's making sure that you know, families get food and toys and things that like every single kid deserves over the holidays. Thank you.
I almost forgot.
Yeah.
All Deaf Digital and Culture. Genesis.
Definitely got a job there. Culture All, Genesis.
Yeah. Digital is another, you know, partnership that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
We are a content creator / ad revenue.
Yeah.
I guess consultant firm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just even like you said, on the entrepreneurial level, not just what you're building, but what you're building is creating jobs and roles and opportunities for so many other people. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being who you are. And thank you for coming to drop some gems on the Black Print, my man. Appreciate
it. Right on. Thank you, man. Love and respect.
Love. Just had a great conversation with Tip, T.I. I mean, the man is teaching you and telling me how he went from being a young entrepreneur to a rapper to an actor to now having this incredible, incredible empire. I think for me, the three kind of lessons that pop out and stood out the most are one, sometimes the greatest place to find our gifts are in our past. So often I think we as adults have challenges identifying what we are best in the world at. But I think if you go back to your original design, if you go back to your childhood and you look at what was I doing back then, I think in that is fertile ground to find gifts. Tip, since he was in second grade, has been rapping. Since he was in fourth, fifth grade, has been an entrepreneur, buying stuff low, selling it high. And he's just been doing that now his entire life. And so the importance of looking into our past to identify gifts that can help propel us into our future. Two, just the importance of giving back. Like, you know, clearly he's got all of these amazing achievements and accolades, but literally it took like 10, 15 minutes for him just to run off all of the good that he is doing in the community, all of the good he is doing in the world, both through for-profit entities and creating jobs, to nonprofit entities, feeding families, taking care of kids, making sure kids have kids for the holidays. But just the importance of, as we all ascend, remembering to give back to those who are less fortunate. And then the third one, which I love, because here at Revolt, we are all about entrepreneurship. We're all about building wealth, building Black wealth, Black economic mobility. You know, when I talked to him about, look, what's the first thing you would tell someone to do with your first check? He said, invest. So this idea that, yeah, we can drive the fancy cars, and yeah, we can have the chains, and yeah, we can have the sneakers, but make sure that the first thing you do when you get that check is that you invest. Invest in yourself, invest in assets, invest in your future so that the money can keep going. Phenomenal conversation with Tip. I'm so happy that he came here. Literally, like my college days and my business school days were full of listening to T.I. do his thing. And so just honored that I got to sit with not just him as the rapper, not just him as the actor, but as the entrepreneur and the philanthropist. That's it for this time. Catch you next time on The Black Print.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.